This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 164 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. Given James Conner's performance in week one, it was another week of questions that heavily surrounded the Steelers' backfield. And like I said on the show last week, you guys know as much as I do about how that's going to play out. You get the same news that I get. I can give you my thoughts on the subject, but those thoughts are what I believe to be rational, and we're already in what I also believe is an irrational situation. I've said from the beginning that I don't think Le'Veon Bell's holdout is smart for him as a player. Not just for the money that he's foregoing, but because we don't know what the impact of saving his body will really be when he's a free agent. And we also are starting to see, and have already seen, that other running backs can thrive in the Steelers system. That's not a good thing for Le'Veon Bell. But because Bell hasn't reported yet, I don't see why we'd expect him anytime soon. And as a result of that, I think James Conner is an RB1 in fantasy football. So you guys can take that for what it's worth. I wouldn't be trading for Le'Veon Bell right now unless the offer was super juicy, and I wouldn't be trading away James Conner. That's my stance on the situation. Anyway, today's a mailbag day, but before we get going, I wanted to let you guys know about NumberFire Premium. With award-winning daily fantasy football tools, survival pool picks, gambling predictions, and premium content from our top experts, NumberFire Premium has everything you need to dominate in 2018. Best of all, Late Round Podcast listeners get their first month of any level of premium access for just $9.99 with promo code CHAMPION. For more info, visit numberfire.com/premium. That's numberfire.com/premium. This first question is from @MichaelRager57. Has your opinion of Rex Burkhead changed with James White's involvement, Sony Michel about to be healthy, and Burkhead's recent concussion? Are you still high on him for the rest of the season? I feel like Rex Burkhead had the quietest 18-attempt, 3-target game of all time in Week 1. He may not have produced like we would have liked, but he saw 49% of New England snaps, which is actually a really strong number in the New England offense, and he had over 58% of the team's carries. Now, James White saw a ton of volume through the air, but that's also what I talked about on my matchup show last week. He was a start candidate because not only do the Patriots need White as a pass catcher, but the matchup called for it. Now, the concussion obviously is worrisome, so that lowers Burkhead a bit versus where I had him a week ago. And the matchup is not very good this week. But going into the season, this wasn't totally unexpected. Burkhead had a nice enough floor where he could be an RB2, but the upside was still there to be an RB1. And keep in mind, New England ran just one goal line play in week one. A big piece of Rex Burkhead's upside is that he'd be the goal line back for the New England Patriots. So my overall opinion on Rex Burkhead hasn't really changed. I think they ease Sony Michel into things as long as Burkhead's healthy, and that's a key here, but it's hard to absolutely love New England's offense in week two given their matchup against Jacksonville. This next question is from @AustinChalice2. Has Kenny Golladay become favored over Marvin Jones? You guys have no idea how happy this question makes me. As a Babytron truther, all I want is for him to see loads and loads of volume and dominate in fantasy football. With that being said, what I talked about in the preseason is no different than how I feel today. Kenny Golladay has loads of upside, and we should feel better about projecting that potential upside given what happened in week one. But the fear is still there that Marvin Jones and Kenny Golladay sort of hurt one another. Like I said, I mentioned this on a mailbag episode before the season started. Given Jones' splits with Golladay last year, Jones was a tough buy for me during drafts, but it wasn't so much that he would finish like a wide receiver 5, just that both Golladay and Jones could finish as wide receiver 3s or so. But Babytron had the upside because he's in his second year, he was a sweet prospect, and his rookie season play was promising. I think it's entirely possible, though, that Golladay outscores Marvin Jones this year. It was possible entering the year. This isn't some random one-game sample take. But given that the Lions have had such a high pass-to-rush attempt ratio under Jim Bob Cooter, even in neutral game scripts, and because there's not a whole lot of pass-catching weapons to go to in that offense outside of those receivers, I think that all three Lions wideouts should be fine this year. Golden Tate is by far the safest, and then Kenny Golladay has the most potential. This next one is from @FantasyFBDriven. Brandon Marshall takes a big step in the Seattle offense. Agree or disagree? Then he also asks, Philip Lindsay will have a larger, more productive role than Royce Freeman. Agree or disagree? So for the first question, it depends how you're defining big step. If you're expecting Brandon Marshall to be a wide receiver 2 in fantasy football, then I disagree. His numbers weren't bad at all in week one with an 18% target share while seeing about 64% of their snaps, and he should see an uptick in snaps without Doug Baldwin. But we've seen plenty of perimeter receivers not do that much in fantasy football with Russell Wilson, and Marshall is 34 years old. I'm not going to say that he'll take a big step. He's a fine waiver wire ad, but I don't think he's going to be this wide receiver too. As for Philip Lindsay, he looks really talented and basically saw identical usage as Royce Freeman in week one, but my hesitation is his size. He's a 5'7", 184-pound back. And meanwhile, Royce Freeman was a fantastic prospect, and he has the size to be a bruiser. I was pretty surprised by that week one usage in Denver, but I would be more surprised if this continues throughout the season. There may be games where it happens, especially in negative game scripts, but not consistently just given the types of backs that they are. Lindsay's also a good waiver wire ad, but Royce Freeman has the more secure role. This next question is from at jreese513. Would like to hear your thoughts on Green Bay's running backs. Aaron versus J. Willie rest of season with Jones returning soon. I've heard J. Will is the better pass protector. Will that solidify his spot with Rodgers banged up? Has he done enough to hold off Jones? Or does Green Bay need a more dynamic runner to open up the pass? So I've talked about this a good bit on this podcast actually throughout the offseason. As I like to say, this is an Aaron Jones podcast. I'm an Aaron Jones truther. I think Aaron Jones is the better running back versus Jamal Williams. And I also think that the football world makes too big of a deal out of pass protection. It's not that pass pro doesn't matter, it's that we often think of those types of things individually instead of looking at them within context. For instance, Jamal Williams is the better pass protector, but how much better is he than Aaron Jones? As in, what's the actual net impact? What's the impact of a good pass protector versus a bad one, and is that impact great enough to play an inferior player? To me, it's not. The Packers should be playing Aaron Jones because Aaron Jones is the better runner. He's the better running back. But Jamal Williams may still see the field more because that's what Green Bay might prefer, especially with the Aaron Rodgers injury. So my take on the Green Bay backfield right now is that I think that Aaron Jones is better, but I fear that the Packers may end up using Jamal Williams due to his pass protection skills. So this might be a lame answer, but Aaron Jones would have more upside in fantasy football, while Jamal Williams might have a safer floor. This next question is from at ZombieToken. Sell David Johnson? The Cards look so bad. So selling a player low who saw strong usage after week one is rarely a good idea. Look guys, the thing that you want in fantasy football is volume. If you're projecting volume correctly and your players are getting volume, good things will generally follow. Of course, there are outliers who are on good offenses and there are players who will see a ton of volume but won't do much in fantasy football because of the offense that they're in, but the biggest battle you face with running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends is getting dudes who are on the field, getting guys who are seeing volume. And David Johnson is seeing the field. In week one, he had 60% of Arizona's carries and over 26% of their targets. Those are fantastic market share numbers. And he still put together a fine fantasy performance despite the fact that the Cardinals did look horrible offensively. So I don't think you should be selling David Johnson just yet because I don't think the return would be all that fair. And the Cardinals' offense has plenty of time to rebound. Keep in mind, there are a ton of new pieces in that offense this season. This next one's from at DRichardFF. Who have you changed your mind about the most after just 1 week? So back in July, I was lower than most on Tyreek Hill. I think I had him as a mid-range wide receiver too. But as August went along, I realized that I had made a mistake and was overstating his deep ball regression because it actually had the chance to be balanced out by a bigger role in the intermediate game. So when the season started, Tyreek Hill was like a wide receiver 13 or so for me. I had him below the Vikings wide receivers, but he was right after them. Today, I think Tyreek Hill is a wide receiver 1. I never really questioned his talent, but man, is he good. And it's going to help that Pat Mahomes really might end up being as effective as Alex Smith was last year on deep balls. And Alex Smith was the best deep ball passer in the league last year. Mahomes was always someone who had a chance to be a top 5 quarterback in fantasy football, and I do wish, though, that I didn't question the connection between him and Tyreek Hill. I think it was logical, too, but sometimes in fantasy football, players are just that good and continuously beat the odds statistically. And Tyreek Hill is looking like one of those players. I'm glad that I started to warm up to him a bit in August, but it was still a lot later than I would have liked. This next question is from at Devi Distributor. Why are we not higher on Jalen Richard? He outsnapped and outplayed Marshawn Lynch. In your breakout article, you said that pass catchers are the ones to target. You're right, that's definitely something that you want to look for, but the main reason most aren't on Jalen Richard is because he's game script dependent. He didn't touch the ball in the first quarter. He saw all of his first half work within the final 3 minutes of the half, and then he didn't touch the ball in the third quarter at all. You'd like to see more consistent work, essentially. And we know that Marshawn is going to be the goal line back. So that's the main reason that people aren't jumping to get Jalen Richard off the waiver wire. Though I don't think he's a bad add, because Oakland could find themselves in a good number of negative game flow situations this year. This last question is from @funwithpronouns. Will you discuss your general approach to scenarios like this? Babytron is available, but I have Golden Tate. How does that affect how willing you are to pick him up? When I'm adding guys off the waiver wire, I'm adding value, period. If he plays running back or wide receiver and he's going to be a strong fantasy football asset, I'm competing the same way for him that any other team is. Some other team might end up outbidding me because they need that position more, but I'll worry about what to do with teammates after I have both of them. The bottom line is, it's always a good thing to have valuable fantasy assets on your roster. That's going to be it for today's mailbag show, though. Thanks to everyone for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, and Stitcher. And make sure you're following me on Twitter, @LateRoundQB. That's where I'm taking all of these mailbag questions. And if any of you guys are in the path of Hurricane Florence, please stay safe this weekend. I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina, so we'll feel a bit of the hurricane as well, but nothing like those of you on the coast. So please stay safe and know that you do have support. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'll talk to you next week.